The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, and 24/7 support. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly Extra today. League Cup shockers. West Ham go robbing off Sherwood in quarterfinal upset while Black Cats beat Moose Blues and both Mancunian sides roll on. Never mind that though, because next up it's Arsenal-Chelsea in the Premier League. Yes, we'll be previewing that and all the top flight games this weekend and the big games around elsewhere. We'll be hearing about the former janitor taking charge of Watford, a new broom, but is it a return to the sweeper system, etc. and so on. And look forward to City A's big finale for 2013, the Milan Derby. All of that plus posts, tweets and big Chinese cities, who can pronounce them, in Football Weekly Extra. Hello, everyone. Award-winning Football Weekly. Back.
Oh, yeah.
Award-winning. Hey, many thanks to everyone who voted for us. And everyone who's made it possible. From the Dave Farrars to the Barry Glendennings.
To the Max Rushtons. And you, Jim.
To the producer Peeds. I suppose in some small way I've made a contribution too. Yeah. But you're not getting that trophy back off me. Not after what you did to the last one, Barry Glendenning.
What?
Well, last year, apparently, we won as well. But nobody knew until about 3 weeks later. Barry said, oh, yeah, we won. Where's the trophy, Barry? Oh, I think I broke it.
No, I didn't break it. I gave it away.
Well, you gave it away?
Yeah.
I suppose we've got so many now, haven't we?
Well, who did you give it to? Who did you give a best podcast trophy to?
Football Ramble, just to rub it in their faces.
No, well, I don't normally go to these award shindigs, so I don't really know what the protocol is.
Right.
And we picked up an award, and there was a nice lady there who was expressing, you know, just sort of her admiration for the physical trophy.
Right.
So I said she could have it.
Right.
Do you think she has lots of trophies at home on the mantelpiece?
Yeah.
And she, it's the way she looks.
She's got like a Brit Award.
Yeah.
I very much doubt it.
Right.
But it's just a bauble, a trinket, you know.
Right. Producer Pete reminds me that isn't an award-winning podcast. I should have by now have introduced the people who are actually talking about it. Listening. Here's Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Jacob Steinberg.
Hello.
And Greg Bukowski.
Hi, James.
Yeah. You're right.
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah.
Super stuff. Anyway, it was a very exciting night on Monday. Because I got to meet Luis Suarez.
Yeah, you were presenting this thing with Sawyer.
That's right.
Your questioning was described as unique on
Yes.
Twitter.
Well, it's not for the first time it's been called that. Mm. But anyway, yeah, we did have a bit of a chat, Luis and me, and he seemed a splendid fellow. And not at all the kind of arm-munching demon
he didn't
been described.
Bite, sink his teeth into your flesh.
Of course he didn't. He was the life and soul of the party and a very gracious fella and invited everyone in the room to come and... take pictures with him and get him to sign autographs.
It's almost as if he's on a massive PR offensive.
Well, I think he certainly won a lot of hearts and minds that night at the Emirates.
Yeah, good.
Good. He might do some winning this weekend as well. They're at home to Cardiff, are they not? We'll talk about...
And he had the lovely Mrs. Suarez in tow as well.
She is lovely. Yeah. I mean, very beautiful as well, but seemed a really nice person too. Mm. They've been together since they were kids. Huzzah!
He was 15, I think. He was 15 when he met her.
Really? Mm. All right. Anyway, Luis Suarez, he's top. Hey, Jacob, it's good that we got you here, because West Ham, hitting the headlines once again with one of those winning at Spurs things that you do so well.
Yeah, if they could just play them every week away, Cardiff at home every week, then you know, they'd be top of the league, basically.
Sorted. Now, what happened in this game?
Well, not a lot for about an hour or so until Tottenham scored. It was a pretty bad game, actually.
Two very unexpected goals. One from Adebayor.
Well, actually, no. I think everybody knew he was going to score.
Really?
Yeah. If you need a team to get you back into the goal-scoring groove, then you want to be playing against West Ham. They always do that.
Right.
But that was a good goal, though. Yeah. That was a good goal.
He thrashed it.
Acrobatic volley, yeah.
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 Cool.
On the counter-attack. But not a lot really happened. Spurs started very strongly for about 15 minutes, and Defoe should have scored. They had a couple of other chances, but they didn't score, and then they sort of reverted to their slow, laborious type of play, lack of invention, and a lot of passes going astray. West Ham just kind of happy to sit back. And then when Spurs did go ahead, suddenly West Ham sprung into life.
Yeah, interesting. Let's just talk a little bit about the new direction at Spurs, because, of course, Monday saw Andre Villas-Boas shown the door.
Yeah.
And Tim Sherwood appointed as kind of interim boss. What was he doing there? He was the youth coordinator.
Technical coordinator, along
with Les Ferdinand, and then they were both sitting there looking very English on the sideline, chewing gum.
It was a very English formation as well. It was 4-4-2, two wingers,
and it was all blood and thunder, was it?
I wouldn't say it was blood and thunder, you know.
But the idea was to get up and get at them.
Yeah, it was swinging and crosses, which didn't really work against a Sam Allardyce team, especially one with James Collins just heading away, ball after ball into the box. And
right.
Also, they don't really have if you want to play two wingers, they don't have a left winger in the entire squad.
Right.
Townsend played there yesterday, but he's more comfortable. I know he's left footed, but he's more comfortable on the right cutting in, isn't he, and getting the shots off. But
Andros Townsend, who has had no assists at all this season and scored one goal, that was from a fluke.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. That isn't the Andros Townsend. Lennon was on the right, but Townsend did his hamstring as well. When it was, I think it was 1-0, just before West Ham scored.
Mm.
And they brought on Chadley, who's flattered to deceive for much of the season. But they don't really have the players to play that formation, which sort of speaks for lack of organisation. The fact that you've got a technical coordinator who wants to play a very different style of football to the manager they had there previously.
It seems completely bizarre. And also the fact that it's a 4-4-2 formation when they've been playing 4-2-3-1 for so long, it just seems bizarre. You normally have a youth set up in the same formation so that the players are used to it when they come to the first team. Mm. So
that would make sense. Yeah.
And he also criticised the fitness of the players, didn't he? He said they weren't fit enough to play a 4-4-2 formation, so why put them in that formation?
Well, that's true. But that's something you have to do when you're a new manager coming in. You say, well, the fitness...
When they say not fit enough, they mean not good enough, basically.
Yeah. Wow, okay, so take us through the last 10 minutes then when...
Well, West Ham all of a sudden just started to attack. They brought on, because they played a bit of a weakened team, which was kind of controversial on Allardyce's part, playing a relatively weakened side, given what he did have available in a cup quarterfinal away to Spurs. You know, West Ham don't get to very many quarterfinals. And
this was his I am not left-handed either moment, though, then when he brings on the proper players. And
he brought on Diarmé and Morrison and Maiga for Carlton Cole. Cole spent much of the game just giving the ball away. And then Maiga is not exactly a man transformed, but has been playing a little bit better since we criticised him just before the Fulham game. Mm. He sort of started to win a few headers and put himself about a bit. But he just dominated the Spurs defence and rose above Chiriches for the goal and for Jarvis's goal and then scored a great header from Diarmé's cross.
His first
goal
he hit the
bar.
Year.
Then he hit 1st December last year. And then he hit the bar with a shot from 30 yards out.
All right. Well done to West Ham. Who are you facing in the?
Yeah, Man City.
Man City.
Amazingly, the Manchester clubs were kept apart.
Right. Okay. All right.
But if West Ham can keep it down to about 6 or 7 in the first leg, then have a chance back up to Upton Park.
That's interesting, because this weekend, we might as well stay with the Hammers for a second or two, you've got Man United. Now, you're aware at Old Trafford. Is it years and years and years since you last won?
They haven't won there since 2007.
Okay.
It's not so bad.
It's not too bad.
Tevez scored.
But this time around, what's the story about, well, Van Persie's out.
Rooney
and now
might
they're
be
saying,
out, yeah.
Rooney might be out as well.
Yeah, but they've, what, Welbeck's scored in the last game, not last night, but against Villa suddenly. Two poachers' goals, and they won last night without Rooney at a notoriously difficult Britannia Stadium where all the hailstones were. So you would have to make Manchester United very heavy favourites.
You would you? Yep. Greg, would you?
I think so, yeah.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Barry, the other exciting League Cup quarter-final news was, of course, Sunderland beating Chelsea.
Yes.
Were you able to watch this game?
I did the minute-by-minute report on it.
Cool.
And when it went, when Barini scored the late equaliser with less than a minute to go, I think. The lads in the office were laughing because it meant I had to do the half hour extra time. So they were saying, you know, are you happy with that or would you have taken the 1-0? And I think at the time I'd have taken the 1-0 defeat.
Really?
Yeah, to get home half an hour earlier.
Already had his cab booked, I think.
But it was fantastic. Sunderland, I think, wanted it more. They were outclassed for vast periods of the game, but hung in there. It was a heroic sort of effort. And in extra time, they looked fitter than Chelsea. And I might get pelters for this. I think Paolo Di Canio deserves a bit of credit for that, because if nothing else, he left a very fit side behind him at the Stadium of Light. It's, you know, well documented how he had them running over assault courses and in Italy and whatnot during the summer. So I think maybe their base fitness is better than Chelsea's, and it showed in that extra time. You know, I would swap a place in the current Capital One Cup semi-final for 3 league points.
Really?
But it should be a huge boost to the dressing room, and you could see how delighted the players were, and it'll hopefully give them some heart and for a very grueling campaign ahead.
It's an interesting question, that. Does winning breed winning, or are Crystal Palace the real winners here, with both Sunderland and West Ham with their attentions distracted by League Cup campaigns? I'm not sure. There are interesting games to discuss for Sunderland as well. They're at home to Norwich, I believe, this weekend. No,
you can. It's Norwich. Yes,
certainly. Yeah. Okay, super. We should also discuss Spurs' next game. We don't know who's going to be in charge of that. It's likely to be Tim Sherwood at this point. Is that right?
Yeah, they're probably not going to. Well, famous last words. You wouldn't think they're going to appoint someone in the next 24 hours or
Barry,
so.
Barry, you're fresh from turning the big handle on the rumour mill.
Yeah.
What came out the other end?
Well, a sort of minced Frank de Boer.
Really?
Yeah. Apparently they've made an approach that's being reported in some quarters.
Right.
Obviously, it's the rumour mill, so it could be complete cobblers.
Right.
I don't know.
But refreshingly, it's the same. Reassuringly, it's the same cobblers that you'll find on other rumour mills. So
yeah, well, all the rumour mills just copy each other. You know, it's basically a roundup of the papers. It's not like we're going ferreting around in the bins outside clubs or anything. We leave that to David Kahn and Owen Gibson.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Everyone has to have a hobby. So it's unlikely, anyway, if it is Frank de Boer, given his position with Ajax and their title campaign and all that, that he'd be arriving before the end of this season. Is that right?
Well, I don't know. Oh. I mean, it's unlikely he'll arrive before the end of this week, but after that, who knows what might happen.
Okay. It's wide open, isn't it? All right, anyway, so Tim Sherwood potentially still in charge, and they're going to be at Southampton. Whew, that's not an easy game.
No.
Now, you spend all your time going to Southampton, don't you, Jacob?
Yeah, not for a while, though.
Oh, really?
Well, yeah, been away, so...
You know. Well, the form's kind of dropped off a bit, but at the same time...
But they had a rough run of fixtures, didn't they?
Yeah, and the last two games they've drawn with City and they've drawn with Newcastle, which are reasonable results. Before that, yeah, they think they lost 3 on the bounce.
But I think Southampton... 2 against Arsenal and Chelsea.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's been very difficult, but then at home... They'd fancy beating Spurs in the current form Spurs are showing them, and they're there to be got at.
Let's go Arsenal Chelsea Monday night's big game. Of course, we will be back on Monday, but it'll be too late for us to preview this game. So let's talk about that. Arsenal. Now, a lot of people saying after the Man City game, you didn't mention the fact that Arsenal had a really rough trip back from Napoli. Supposedly, they didn't get back till 4 in the morning on, Thursday a.m. Effectively missed a night's sleep and then were playing again on Saturday lunchtime, and Wenger was making quite a lot of fuss about this. I'm not sure why it is that a club would choose to fly back that night and put their players through that instead of just staying overnight in a hotel, of which there are many in Naples, and then, you know, basically just doing a more staggered return.
If there was an impact on the players, it did show in the passing, because the passing was completely off by a lot of the players in midfield, players who normally so good in possession, with just firing them 5 yards away from players, and it just didn't link up in the same way. But then, you know, against City, I thought City were fantastic against Arsenal, and, you know, that's probably telling as well.
They certainly were. This time around, Arsenal will have had 9 days rest, while Chelsea have been through the ringer, quite literally, at the Stadium of Light, with extra time against Gaspoyet's side. It's interesting, isn't it? Because that whole narrative of, oh, they drew it home to Everton and then they lost down in Naples, and now the wheels are coming off because they got smashed at the Etihad, and now Chelsea arriving to really rub it in and take the lead off them. Maybe doesn't set up that way this game.
Well, no, Chelsea aren't scoring goals, though. I mean, they're really struggling. I mean, Mourinho, you know, he's admitted it many times that he hasn't got strikers who are scoring. Well, he's got one, and he's at Everton. And the rest of the team, he's got some handy players in and around behind the striker, but, you know, they're chipping in now and again. So they're dominating games, and then there seems to be a bit of a
a mental block when they get to the final third, and they're really struggling to turn possession into goals. So
Barry, you shaded in a corner of your newspaper during this. What do you think?
Well, you'd wonder, is Mourinho, if he does hark back to the tactics that served him so well in, 2004-05, when they just recorded a series of incredibly tedious 1-0 wins.
It's a binary season, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, that. Well, Chelsea fans are in for a treat if they start doing that again. You know, who wouldn't pay vast amounts of money to go and watch that week in, week out? Will Roman Abramovich approve? Because he's famously likes his, you know, free-flowing attacking football. So which does he want, entertainment or success? Or
football's moved on since then as well in terms of tactics and the way Mourinho was playing at that point. A lot of teams would go to, you know, to Stamford Bridge Day, and they would park the bus, as he very famously said at the time. And now there's a lot more teams, I think, in the Premier League who are more willing to go and attack teams, and therefore you need to be able to score goals, right, to win games. And, you know, I think to be able to set out a defence to stop teams, you know, who are really coming and going to have a go at you is much more difficult. And he's not found a way to do that. And yeah, I also think he, you know, he's perhaps his best player he's got there is Eden Hazard, and he needs to maybe alter the tactics to suit him more to get the best out of him. And I mean, at Real Madrid, he had a player in Ronaldo who just scored goals for fun.
Chelsea do quite like playing against Arsenal, and I think they've won their last three games with each time with
different
managers.
They won the League Cup earlier this season.
They won the League Cup, Mourinho. They won. Rafa beat them in the league last season, and Di Matteo won at the Emirates in September last year. And Wenger's never beaten Mourinho.
Wenger's never beaten Mourinho.
Yep.
Never.
Never.
I've been reminded it's quite a long part one, so I'm just gonna throw a couple of bits of team news. Well, not exactly news, but Koscielny out. Is Gibbs due to be back? Because he
was just rested, wasn't he?
Was he just rested? So Nacho Monreal presumably is going to be very much rested for this one.
Yeah. Well, he had a nice rest against Manchester City.
He certainly did. So what do we think? Are Chelsea going to spring a surprise, or are Arsenal going to defend their lead at the top? Greg?
It's going to be 1-1.
Really? Jacob?
I think Chelsea will win.
Really?
Yeah.
Barry. I'll go for an Arsenal win.
I'm going for Arsenal with you, Barry. Hand in hand. Let's walk into that happy sunset.
I'm only going 1-1, by the way, because that'll mean Liverpool will stay top.
Yeah, Liverpool go top.
When they beat Cardiff.
Cardiff, all right. Well, that's enough of that. Here comes a bit of music, and then there'll be some more of that.
To buy your copy of Tales from the Secret Footballer for just £6.50, that's 50% off the recommended retail price, head to The Guardian Bookshop at guardianbookshop.co.uk/footballtales and enter the offer code TALES. That's T-A-L-E-S. The offer's valid until the 24th of December.
Liverpool v Cardiff then, Greg. Here we go. Mackay tension.
Yes.
Yeah, Vincent Tan's very upset.
He is very upset. Well, he's upset that Mackay asked.
He's an angry man, Vincent Tan, isn't he?
Yeah, and
Vincent Tan, angry man.
I can't imagine. I mean, it must be a very difficult time to be a Cardiff fan, because your team's doing well in the Premier League since being promoted, and you know, you've had reasonable results, and you've got a manager who's trying to do the best for you, and you're looking above that manager and thinking, when that manager goes, this fella is going to completely ruin things, and we could end up being like Blackburn Rovers and in the Championship, and you know, under owners who have no idea what they're doing. So I think it's important that if you're a Cardiff fan, you're just hoping Mackay, you know, has got broad shoulders, can take the criticism, which is unjust, from Vincent Tan, and will stay at
the club. Is it unjust?
Well, I think so. I mean, he's got rid of, you know, the man who signed his players, who you know, was the sporting director.
Supposedly because he overspent on those players, and he's upset. Basically,
but those players are going to keep them in the Premier League, and
Vincent
Tan's
perspective is that he gave them a budget, they overspent it, and now he finds that the manager's saying they're going to spend more money in January when he hasn't approved any of that. So he's saying, hang on, employee, I didn't approve any of this.
What football manager never goes to the board and asks for more money to strengthen the squad? They've all done that over the years. And Cardiff, you know, I think, so far, if they can continue on the trajectory they're going, they can finish high up the Premier League and make money for Vincent Tan and be, you know, a better club, you know, a better sustained club than they are going to be.
Do you see them going further up the Premier League in this particular game, Greg? No, you don't, do you?
No, I don't, no. Probably because they've not scored enough goals this season, and Liverpool have scored shed loads and have been very impressive at home. They won the last five out of five, so... Yeah. But I think, you know, Cardiff, so far this season, have done better than people expected. And
But not away from home, have they?
No, not away from home. That's where, yeah, and they've struggled to score goals. I think Liverpool have been very good. Yeah, they've been very good at home against all the teams that you would expect them to beat in years gone by, and sometimes they've drawn at Anfield, and particularly in the season when they could have won the league and challenged for the league. They drew too many games.
Yeah, this year they're on fire.
They're on fire. Suarez has scored 17 in the last 11 Premier League games, which is it's an unbelievable record he's got. I think,
but he'd probably be struck now by the famous curse of the Football Supporters Federation Player of the Year award.
Who's that hit in the past?
I have no idea.
Oh, okay. It's not like he's been made manager of the month.
Well, that would be really strange.
I bet he didn't give his award away either, did he?
I bet he didn't.
Yeah, I bet he's got it at home. A lot of Liverpool fans were saying that in the modern era, there's no player who's played for Liverpool now who is playing as well as he is. The form he's showing is incredible. The goals he's scoring are incredible. And he just seems perfectly suited to modern football. The size of him, he's a perfect blend of skill and physicality and attitude. On the pitch, you know, not talking
technique
about...
Technique and tenacity.
Yeah. Well, he's obviously got a bit of tenacity. It's all that Mate that he drinks.
The big question, Liverpool with or without Gerrard?
Without Gerrard,
no, I know they will be, but
I think they're better. I think that a better team without Gerrard, or Gerrard should be playing not in that middle two. He should be playing further out on the right hand side in a forward three if he comes back into the team. Because this season particularly, I've seen it in game against Everton. I thought he was poor. His discipline in midfield was poor. He kept wandering off out to that right-hand position anyway, because his best thing now is his crossing ability on free kicks, and when he gets the ball out wide, he can deliver it. But I think the player Lucas Henderson and Joe Allen, three players who had a lot to prove this season for different reasons, and they have assumed responsibility in Gerrard's absence, and I think that's... You know, that makes Liverpool function better as a team. They're not just looking for Gerrard to see what they should do next. And I think those players against Spurs were very good.
Could go top of the league by 3 o'clock on Saturday. And interestingly enough, while they try and take top spot, also on that whole Mersey-South Wales axis of football, Swansea are hosting Everton, who are trying to bust into the top four.
Yeah, Everton, they've got such a great opportunity this season, Everton, to get into that top four, the way that United are sort of creaking and Spurs look like they're almost falling out of it, and I'm not sure if Newcastle, that are playing well, can necessarily sustain it. But you just look at that De La Feu injury and you just think they might need to, in January, just get in a couple of players and really, really go for it, because under Martinez they've been fantastic this season, played amazing football, especially against Arsenal. Definitely against United as well. One of the best team, both times, one of the best team performances I think anyone's seen this season. But you just want them to go for it and really grab this opportunity. Everton got great players in that side.
Martinez says that European clubs are knocking on the door, offering him players on loan because of the good things he's done for Newcastle and Delafield.
Well, we've said, I have anyway, I think others have too. We've wondered on this podcast, was he really that? All that as a manager, because
Martinez.
Wigan were constantly in relegation trouble, and I think he's answered the question.
He's obviously always been not a great manager, but Wigan have what, crowds of about 10,000, 15,000, and that he lost their best player every single season at Wigan, or sometimes even more than one, and each time he was able to keep them up, and they won the FA Cup with Wigan. It was kind of obvious, wasn't it? He beat Man City in the final, beat Everton along the way 3-0, and they played great football all the time under him. And interesting football as well. He's always interesting tactically as well.
All right, Jacob, when you put it like that,
and
one of the best, he's a good manager.
One of the best great escapes ever as well, Wigan. Yeah. The most stylish great escape.
Yeah.
When they went and beat Arsenal, United, Newcastle, stuffed them all along the way.
Well, there you go. So that's what's going to happen for Everton at Swansea, just so we know.
I think Everton will win. I think it'll be a good game too.
Right, okay.
Swans haven't been playing that well. I'd say 2-1 to Everton.
Right, okay, cool. I'm just going to roll on. We talked about Man United, West Ham, and that's a win, is it, for Man United?
Yeah.
Really? Okay. Stoke, Aston Villa. They're both a little bit off the drop, 5 and 6 points. Stoke
Stoke have only, I think they've lost one in the last six, but then Villa have been, they've been strange, they've been quite a strange team this season. They're very inconsistent. They've won, I think, two games ago against, away at Southampton, I think they beat Southampton, and then
yeah,
they've gone and got beat by Man United, as they often do.
Well, those two, as I say, have a little bit of breathing space, but here's some clubs who really don't. Crystal Palace, Fulham and Sunderland, all in the bottom three. Sunderland, you're hosting Norwich, which is a fine opportunity to A, drag the Canaries back into things, and B, make up a little bit of that 5 points that separates you, Barry, from safety.
Yeah, Sunderland are going to be bottom at Christmas, whatever right. happens.
Right.
So that'll take some getting out of, but...
This is a big game, though.
It is. Well, every game's a big game for right. them at the moment, but they have a run of nice fixtures, which I... can't remember off the top of my head, but
they're nice
I
anyway.
did mention it. They're very winnable between now and the end of February. In some matches, any fixture is very winnable.
They're all tough games at this level, and exactly. they're all big games as well. Big tough games. Yeah, that's awful.
Sunderland are very good in
but
patches.
The only good team that Sunderland play between now and February in the league is Everton.
Ah, well, what about Crystal Palace then? Who are they hosting? Newcastle. They're hosting Newcastle. Now, Crystal Palace, discuss.
They've got great fans.
They have, haven't they got great fans?
They probably have the best fans in the Premier League because so many grounds are like mausoleums now or libraries, but Sellers Park is anything but. And for that alone, they probably deserve to stay up. I'm going to bang the drum again. I think they've played a lot of good football since Holloway left. They haven't got the results, always got the results they deserve. They could have beaten Chelsea last weekend, probably should have beaten Chelsea last weekend. Marouane Chamakh's come into a bit of form.
Mm.
And
it's three wins in the last five, even though they haven't always had the rub of the green. It's impressive. It's quite a few
clean
sheets.
Say the way they're going, they will stay up.
All right.
Never, even under Holloway, there was that game against Fulham where they were atrocious, especially defensively, but they've never actually been... stuffed this season, and you that does give you, I think, a bit of hope that they were never losing games 4 or 5 nil.
Right.
And there wasn't too much wrong with them. They just weren't taking their chances at the right moments and letting in stupid goals. But Pulis, like him or
say it, go on, say
no,
it.
No, he does know how to get a team out of that trouble and keep them away from it. And he knows what it takes. And they have been a bit more clinical.
Pulis v. Pardew. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, Pardew does like a bit of a scrap on the touchline, doesn't he?
So. Right. It's a big game for him, of course, back at Crystal Palace.
Mm. Yeah, I think...
Points for Palace in this one, do you think? Blank looks all right.
Newcastle have been very impressive recently. Yeah. So, a hard game, especially if Remy's in form.
Right. And yet, Barry?
Yeah, I'll go for the Palace win.
Yeah, good on you, Baz.
They do well to get a point.
All right. West Brom Hull. Hey, what's this story that Andre Villas-Boas, in like a perfect marriage of acronyms, it could be AVB for WBA. That's almost kind of palindromic in its... if only they were called West Bromwich Albion. Or
but
Bromwich
they are
West
in Germany.
Albion. Yeah, that would be great. Anyway, initials-wise, it's brilliant. It all marries up. But this was in the rumour mill this morning. Not in yours, though, I don't think.
I mentioned it.
Did you? Where'd you get this from?
I can't remember.
Some spoof has just put this one out there to see who will bite, yeah?
Or it does seem very strange.
It'd be brilliant if he came straight back, though.
Yeah, but...
And then West Brom play Spurs.
Wouldn't it be
fantastic.
Extremely financially imprudent of him to take the job?
But he's so
away.
Rich, he can... It's all about getting back in the game, getting back on the horse, surely, for him.
Is it?
I think it is. That would be brilliant.
He's going to wait until that Porto job comes up again.
You think so?
That. Yeah, he's just rolling around in all the money in his big mansion at the moment, surely.
Come on, Andre, take the West Brom.
He's got five motorbikes. He's got a boat.
Yeah.
He's got, like, enough money to sink that boat.
Yeah, I tell you what he's also got.
Hank Scorpio as well.
Hmm?
He looks like Hank Scorpio. So he could sink a boat.
Hank Scorpio, is he that cartoon character out of The Simpsons?
Yeah, the supervillain. Yeah.
Does he look like Andre Villas-Boas?
He does, doesn't he, with his beard?
I don't know.
With a beard, yeah. And sort of
I'm getting nods from...
Reddish beard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's what he's going to do with his money.
Anyway, they're playing Hull this weekend. I didn't have any other notes, so I went off on a big Andre Villas-Boas riff. What we haven't talked about yet is this. Craven Cottage, Saturday afternoon, the big test. Can Man City do it away from home?
Well, they did in their last away game against...
Bayern Munich.
Bayern Munich, I was going to say West Brom, where they, yeah, but Bayern Munich as well, which was a strange game. But yeah, they won 3-2 at West Brom.
Right.
They were 3-0 up and then let in two goals near
but they
the
haven't
end.
Got Aguero and they haven't no. got Zabaleta.
Is he definitely out, Zabaleta?
Zabaleta's out for a while.
Do you reckon he's out till mid-January maybe? And he's a huge loss for them.
Huge,
he's,
isn't he?
He's been brilliant. He's been, I'd say, arguably he's been their best player in the last 2 years, particularly last season when they weren't doing particularly well. He was the one who still had the right attitude. He's physical. He's very direct going forward, and he's effective as well.
And Aguero out 8 weeks now. They're saying it, the figure's going up and up. That's 13 league goals taken out of the side. Boom. So is it going to be Dzeko and Negredo, two big men?
But the thing about Dzeko is he's very inconsistent, especially right. when he starts. He's better usually coming off the bench, and you wonder maybe if they'll bring in Navas and maybe move Silva behind.
Scored a couple against Leicester, bit of confidence.
Right, well, he's done well in the League Cup, actually. 7 goals in 8 League Cup appearances. But, well, that's very much a question. Is that enough of a question to sow seeds of doubt in our mind about them getting the win at Craven Cottage?
No.
Okay. So you think another disappointment for Rennie Molenstein?
Yes.
Yeah, I've been practicing that, Coward. Dutch pronunciation, the finishing touches, Molenstein. The EU at the start is not pronounced as that weird Mew combination as in Munich, but more like the Ur from Özil, already the most discussed character of the season. So that's Molenstein. Anyway, and then he says about Strootman. I can't get that one. Anyway, sorry. Pronunciation, it's becoming a real problem on the pod. The more foreign players getting involved in football...
That's your thing, though, isn't it?
What, like, foreign
being
players?
Able to pronounce
no,
foreign
I've got a very
names,
small
isn't
kind of I've got a very small radius of accurate pronunciation.
Do you practice them before you come on the
no,
pod?
No, I don't. No. I don't. And Hoot Nannies is really upset about it. Love the pod, but Jimbo's inability to pronounce. Well, I'm going to say I said Guangzhou last time. He got very upset about that. It's
that
it's,
poster's name is actually Hoot Nannies as well.
Is it?
Yeah,
Hoot Nannies.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to go with Guangzhou. Guangzhou, I think. Shanghai, maybe. Is it the same town? I'm having a go, Hoot Nannies. I know exactly what town you're talking
about. How annoyed is he?
I've been to that, but it's really... It's the world's ninth largest city.
Should he not have a word with himself?
Do foreign people pronounce all English words correctly?
Yes, they do. No, wrong. Exactly, they get it wrong the whole time. But it is quite annoying.
French people call me Jacob.
But listen, he's got a point. He says it's the world's ninth largest city, and it really is basic knowledge.
It's not basic knowledge.
Well, it is for the people in... What do we say? Ginseng?
Guangzhou?
Ginseng. Oh. It's Guangzhou, everybody. I'm joking. It's Guangzhou.
Knowing how to make a cup of tea is basic knowledge.
Right.
Or I don't know how to make a cup of tea, to be fair.
Anyway, I'm sorry about all that confusion. And we'll talk about Guangzhou very soon. You don't know how to make a cup of tea?
I don't drink it, so...
He's one of those...
But people must ask you. When you say, anybody want a cup of something, and they say tea...
I don't say that. I say, would you like a glass of orange juice, or would you like some water?
Wow, Jacob, social skills failure.
I don't drink whiskey, I know how to pour one.
Yeah, right. Well, that's very different.
It's simpler, isn't it? All right,
it's
really, really simple. The tea bag has to be in and the water has to be absolutely boiling when it hits the tea bag.
Right.
With the difference completely.
How much
to
milk
coffee,
do you put in?
Well, that's up to the personal thing. In my case, none, because the whole point of drinking tea, that's like saying I'll have a whiskey and putting milk in it. I mean, tea is a very delicate blend of infused flavours from leaves. Why would you then chuck... That's like chucking ketchup on it.
I put a very small amount of milk in and leave the bag in for the extra flavour.
Right, well, yeah. I understand why you would do that, but...
What about coffee?
It's crucial not to let boiling water touch if you're having instant... You see, we're not even... It's not even worth discussing instant coffee, is it? We'll move on, eh? We'll move on.
One important matter, if you're making tea in a pot, it's very important to warm the pot.
Oh, yeah.
Before you... put the tea.
I don't know why is that. Is there a sign?
I don't know. It seems to be a peculiarly Irish thing.
Oh no! I think it's quite.
I can't imagine you ever making a pot of tea and having little teacups and taking a tray into your living room and
Barry,
putting it down on the coffee table.
Barry, I'll have you know, is a dream life companion. I would say probably.
Well, I used to go out with a girl, and one of the things that made her think I was great was the fact that I made her tea in a pot.
On a tray. Because Barry just mimed a tray when he did that. Yeah. Either that, he was
thrusting. I brought her to her in bed, and then she agreed to go out on a date with me.
Well, was she not already significantly involved?
Technically, you know.
Yeah. What other... Well, on her big listo things that make Barry... What are your other selling points?
God. I think the tea was... The fact that I owned a teapot was the main selling point. It only got me so far, and we're no longer together.
All right, then. Anyway, that's enough for what's been a fairly long-winded part two, but all of it absolutely tip-top and up-to-the-minute info. After this, a little bit of a Euro special. Hey! Ahoy!
Ahoy there!
Ah, hey! It's Captain Horncastle!
Shiver me timbers!
I'm just trying to think of other nautical expressions. Belay that, Mr. Glendinning.
Let's hang him from the yard arm. Keel haul him.
Yes. How are you, James?
All good, thank you.
Right, I tell you what, busy week in Italy.
Just a bit.
Where are we going to start? We're going to start with the crazy news that Cristiano Brocchi and Gennaro Gattuso have been called in for questioning over this whole Calcio Scommessi betting thing.
Yes. I think we should say from the outset, this isn't a new scandal. This is an investigation that began in the spring of 2011, has been ongoing ever since. And during that time, they've generated a number of leads, the prosecutors, and they've been following them up, and that's led to new information. And there were four arrests on Monday night, early morning Tuesday, and the houses of Gattuso and Brocchi were raided, basically because they appear to have been in contact with the people who were arrested, who were part of another betting ring, people who the prosecutors have been looking to identify for some time. But if you actually look at the kind of fine print of their investigation, Gattuso doesn't seem to be all that central to their investigation.
Yeah, just to say, he basically, the guy who's regarded as the Mr. Y, Il Vecchio, no? It's Il Vecchio, the old guy. He sent 13 texts to Gattuso, and that's basically why Gattuso's involved in this, because his number's been texted to by Il Vecchio. But Gattuso never replied. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That is precisely right. And he has been very forthcoming, you know, with the prosecutors. He said, look, come on, I want to talk about this. I want to clarify everything. You know, if I am found of any wrongdoing, I'll go into the city square and kill myself. That's right. How strongly he's felt about it.
Generous offer.
Brocchi, incidentally, he said, look, I know this guy. Half of the people involved in Italian football know this guy. He's one of those people who just hangs on. This is who always wants tickets or shirts and that sort of thing. But he, you know, he also has been very forthcoming. He's, you know, he basically turned up at the police station with his laptops and said, "There you go, check it all out." So I think they're quite confident of being cleared of any wrongdoing. But I think again, this is what's really concerning about the reemergence of Calcio Scommessa, if you like, is that after the initial wave of arrests, the people who were still at large stopped trying to approach directors, stopped trying to approach players with a view to fixing games. But when sentencing came around, those who'd already been arrested, and it was such a farce, and many of them sort of got off and their sentences were laughed at, they basically restarted again. And so 53 games have come under investigation from last season, three of which are in Serie A. And you know, just listening to the chief prosecutor in Cremona, I mean, he sounds very weary about all this. You know, it's just, you know, why are we making the same mistakes here? You know, are we not learning from them?
Yeah, absolutely. These were the sporting verdicts that were laughed at. The criminal case, I think, is still yet to be heard. Is that right? For the likes of Mauri, who got a 9-month ban, and I think he was one of the harshest players dealt with, which is quite an extraordinary thought. Well, there you go. That's something that will run and run. We'll obviously look forward to getting a little bit more clarification about the role or lack of role of the likes of Gattuso and Brocchi. Meantime, lots of other Italian news, like, for example, Beppe Sannino, formerly fired of Chievo, now taking over at Watford. What's the story there?
Yeah, a bit of a surprise. Obviously, Watford are owned by the Pozzo family, who also own Udinese and Granada, so perhaps it isn't much of a surprise that they would appoint an Italian coach. Sannino, incidentally, is kind of former lower league player who, when he retired, was humble enough to take a job as a janitor in some local authority hospitals. You know, he wasn't afraid to do the dirty work to make ends meet. He then became a coach of several sort of lower league teams. He won the, I think, the fourth division. He's won the third division, and then his sort of best work came at Varese, where he took them from the fourth division to within a playoff of reaching Serie A. And it was on the back of that work that he got a couple of jobs in the Italian top flight with Siena, who he kept up, and then with Palermo, where, you know, I think the average tenure of a manager is only, what, 100 or so days. He didn't last long, and I think last season they came round to the belief that had Zamperini, the president of Palermo, not sacked him so soon after the beginning of the season, he would have perhaps kept them up, because when Zamperini brought him back, he almost did just that. So I think he's a good coach. A lot will depend on how he adapts to working in England, because he's never worked here before, and also I'm not sure whether he speaks the language or not. I assume not. But yeah, I mean, the Italian coaching school is very good.
Now, the other thing we should talk about is the Milan Derby, which is coming up this Sunday evening. Gosh, looking for some spectacular choreography there from the Curva Sud and the Curva Nord for this one, James. Big banners. What have they got planned, the Inter fans?
Well, it's funny you should say that, because their end has been closed, pending appeal, after some discriminatory chants were heard. They hope to have it reopened in time for the derby. Incidentally,
they're appealing Milan, the sentence, basically.
They are, yeah. And the Milan supporters have shown solidarity with them. They have even said that if the Inter end is closed for the Madonnina, yeah, they will stay silent throughout it. They won't put on any choreography, which I'm sure will make for an excellent spectacle in what is being billed as the Derby dell'Austerità, the austerity derby, or Derby del mediocrità, the mediocre derby. So it perhaps doesn't have the luster of yesteryear.
All right, nice one. The ultras of Inter and Milan are, I think, meeting today in Milan to discuss what concerted action they should take together to try and get this ban overturned. There is quite a history of these bans being overturned, so maybe we will see the Curva Nord populated.
Why is it that, say, Inter's ultras, or fans of teams in other countries, seem to wield a hell of a lot more power than their English counterparts?
James?
Well, I mean, they're organised for one thing, that they have been granted vast powers, certainly in the past, when it comes to ticketing, even merchandising. I think you remember Lazio in the sort of 90s, the owner sort of, to curry favour with them, gave them basically all the rights to sell Lazio's official merchandising, which they got very kind of wealthy off and whatnot. And it's not exactly similar with Milan, Inter Milan, but
well, Milan famously had one of their Capo Ultras shot by another rival faction over the rights to selling on tickets for the Curva. So, there's all sorts of bizarre stuff going
well,
on.
Well, I mean, I'm reading Zlatan's book at the moment, and there was one incident where he came off the field after playing a game for Inter, and he was ushered over for a meeting with a gang of very hard-looking ultras who wanted to have a word with him about something or other. They were not pleased. I think he was moving on to Barcelona or something, and had made it clear in no uncertain terms he didn't want to stay at Inter anymore. And you couldn't. That's inconceivable, say, it happening at Arsenal or Manchester United or something.
Absolutely. In the middle of the Rome derby, the Roma fans beckoning Francesco Totti to wander over to them so they can inform him of something. Genoa fans doing the same to that. I mean, the great example, Lilian Thuram, who was subject of a transfer interest from Lazio and turned up one day at Parma's training ground to find the Lazio ultras sitting in the dressing room ready to put forward their case for the move. Extraordinary. But yeah, it's one of those things to try and curry favour, as James was saying, to try and keep them sweet. They've been allowed to assume. And there is a case for saying that it is not entirely a negative thing that the fans do have a voice that is listened to.
I think it's great
whether
that they have a voice.
Abuse that is another question. Still, it's a huge game for both teams, isn't it? Inter, who got knocked back by Napoli last week. We always get loads of goals with Inter. 4-2 they lost, which means they are now They're 7 points off third place. That's a long way. They need a big. And Milan are 9 points behind them, so they're 16 points off. And this is the more or less the same comeback that they've done in the last couple of years, or certainly last year. But this is a huge game for them. They drew with Roma on Monday night. Kaká was influential again then. Scolari's going to be at the game on Sunday night to see him with a possible view to a recall for Brazil. Would you say they look the favourites for this, Milan?
It's hard to tell because both of these, until the Napoli game for Inter last Sunday, they'd been unbeaten. They'd just been drawing too many games. In fact, they'd only lost one game all season prior to that fixture. And Milan, likewise, they are on their sort of longest unbeaten run so far this season, but both of these teams just can't seem to find a way to win. The result of this match may well set the tone for the new year because obviously, I think Walter Mazzarri, the Inter coach, has said, look, either we need to invest in the January transfer window if we want to try and get into the Champions League. There doesn't seem to be that much of a resources to do that. The new owner wants to sell to buy. That's why we're seeing all those links with Freddy Guarin to Chelsea. For example, he wants to cut the wage bill. So, likewise, there's a lot of restructuring going on at Milan. I think there's a board meeting today where basically Barbara Berlusconi and Adriano Galliani will agree to sort of share powers. Yeah, again, it's kind of a case of can either of these sides get into the Europa League rather than the Champions League?
Good stuff, James. All right, well, I look forward to seeing you there. We can enjoy it together.
Excellent.
Yeah, not there as in the San Siro, but there as in the kind of nerve centre of BT's European coverage operations. Well, we'll be able to see such other delights as Paris Saint-Germain against Lille. There's a huge game going on this weekend in France as all the European leagues basically wrap up operations pre-Christmas. You've got first against third there, PSG first, Lille third. Surprise contenders, really, for the title. That's going to be a huge game. Ibra, of course, one would imagine will be involved. Cavani, your chum. That's that in France. In Germany, there's a big game. I know that Rafa would want us to mention Borussia Mönchengladbach's game with Wolfsburg, because Wolfsburg, out of nowhere, have come up to challenge for the top four places, and they're now only 3 points behind both Mönchengladbach, who they play on Sunday afternoon, and Borussia Dortmund, who are really struggling of late, so that's a big game. And then you've got, of course, Bayern Munich, who are off duty this weekend in Bundesliga terms, because they're going to be in Morocco, in the World Club, or the Club World Cup final. Very exciting, this. Here's a major and perhaps telling argument against the importance of the Club World Cup. If they win on Sunday, Raja Casablanca will be the best team in the world.
Well, yeah. When you put it like that, it's kind of hard to...
Right.
But it's a tournament there to win. I mean, the League Cup, Sunderland and West Ham might win it. Right. If they win it, does that make them the best team in the league? No.
It's the best team in the League Cup is what it makes them.
Right.
Its status just comes from how rare it is to ever be able to play in it.
That's true. I say Raja, of course, it's Raja. Raja.
Oh, you better be careful. Get it
Raja
right.
Raja Casablanca. Or Casablanca.
You'll have lots of people in fezes writing and complaining about your
stereotypes problem. Here, Barry.
Oh, sorry.
Right. Anyway, they're in the final. Bit of an upset this, because they scored two goals in the final minutes to stun Ronaldinho's, I nailed that one, Atletico Mineiro. I don't know if you saw this game.
I saw the final two goals. Actually, I saw...
Ronaldinho Gaúcho's brilliant free kick.
Yeah, it did. But the final goal that Casablanca scored was a lovely little chip by... The two fellas kind of broke clear, and the two of them were running with the ball simultaneously because they were so kind of enthusiastic about wanting to score. One of them kind of shoved the other out the way, and then the keeper came out, and he just did a little scoop on the run. Who was it? Poborski-like? Kind of scoop over the keeper, clattered against the bar, and then the other fella who'd been elbowed out the way by the one who took the shot ended up scoring, so he did get his reward in the end.
Brilliant.
And there was wild fisticuffs?
No, they celebrated by stripping Ronaldinho naked, pretty much. But you'd fancy Bayern, who themselves had a 3-0 win over what do they call Gangshou style in the semi-final, Marcello Lippi's side, to absolutely trounce the poor Moroccan chances. Who knows, eh? That's the magic of cup football, as you very much say. Hey, we never mentioned Spain, where Miroslav Djukic has been fired by Valencia since our last pod, and they're not sure who the new chap's going to be. Andre Villas-Boas, who knows? Could be. But there's a lot of talk of Pizzi, former Valencia player, with Roberto Ajala coming in as well as a kind of sporting director at Valencia. As this weekend they host Real Madrid. Super stuff. That's as much as we've got to offer on this bright and breezy Thursday. Do join us again on Monday when we'll be puzzling over what happened at the weekend and looking forward to Christmas. Lots of Crimbo chat. Are you in on Monday? Seasonal?
No, I'll be making my way home to the Emerald Isle on Monday. Well, I'm flying.
Flying home for Christmas.
I'll be driving part of anyway. The journey from Dublin.
So. Well, Cliff said, catch a train, take a plane. It was very much, it doesn't matter, home for Christmas.
Well, I'll be getting a bus, train, a plane.
All right then.
Another bus and then a car.
All right, super. That wouldn't have scanned very well. But yeah. Okay. What's your favourite Christmas record, Jacob? I know it's not, religiously your thing, but
I hate Christmas songs.
Do you? Yeah. There must be one.
No, because you just every tonight's
there's only 10 of
Guardian
them.
Sport Christmas drinks and
it's the first time I've heard of it.
Yeah, I know. But you know that about 10 o'clock they're going to stick on all the Christmas songs.
Yeah,
every single time you can't escape them.
Greg, come on!
I've got a bit of an out there suggestion. Donna and Blitzen by Badly Drawn Boys are very nice.
I'm not familiar with that. I'm going to go and look
Donna
it
and
up.
Blitzen, yeah, it's got all the sleigh bells in it.
Yeah, I like ones with sleigh bells. I like Just Like Christmas by Lou, or however you meant to pronounce that, which is all about how the fact it wasn't Christmas, but it's got sleigh bells in it. But
somebody,
Barry, you were having a long chat with the lovely Kelly Cates about the fact that Christmas.
Well, we have this
really
argument every year, and Kelly Cates. My favourite Christmas song is "Stay Another Day" by E17, which
everyone
she contends
that.
Is not a Christmas song because it's not. There's no mention of Christmas in it.
Right.
It's not about Christmas, and the only way it's in any way Christmassy is because they're in the video. They're wearing white parkas, and there's a bit of snow.
Yeah.
But there are Christmas bells in it.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and it was.
I Believe in Father Christmas. How about that one by Emerson Lake and Palmer? Do you remember that? That's got a little bit of Nutcracker in it. I like that.
What's the sort of one, the sexy voice lady going?
Mariah Carey. It's Mariah Carey, isn't it?
What's your favourite Hanukkah song?
I don't know. Is there a market for Hanukkah records?
There must be. There's one about a dreidel.
Sing it for us, Jacob. Sing.
South Park.
What's one of South Park?
I don't know. Just dreidel over and over again. Dreidel.
Yeah, that one. Yeah,
that one.
Yeah.
Is that the song?
What does dreidel mean?
At least the easy
dreidel is the little spinny toy.
A top.
Yeah, the spinny top.
And they just say dreidel, dreidel, dreidel.
I made you out of clay.
There's a lot of making out of clay things, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Crikey. Well, thanks for that.
That's already been gone there.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, good. All right, well, listeners, enjoy your pre-Christmas. Listen to those top tunes. The waitresses usually get to mention when people want to be a little bit left field, but not too left field. They say the waitresses. The waitresses, they did that. That was a Christmas record. It was all about going out shopping for last minute stuff. You remember the waitresses? You know the one.
Oh, yeah.
It's Christmas something.
Yeah.
All right, anyway.
We should definitely hand that award back.
No mention of the Pogues as well. I love that.
Yeah, well, everyone likes the Pogues.
Pogues are in Brixton Academy this tonight and tomorrow, I think.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Cool.
Hoping to get along.
I bet
you're going to
go along. They must cash in this time of the year, every year, just.
Well, they didn't do it last year. Well, they're a Pogue down this year because Philip Chevron died, and I don't know how Shane McGowan is. Interestingly, one of the very first gigs I ever went to when I was 15 years old was the Pogues, and then I went to see them, I think it was 2 years ago in Brixton Academy, and Shane McGowan was in better condition 2 years ago than he was when I was 15, 25 years ago.
Wow. Magnificent stuff. All right, well, listen, have a super time. We'll be back on Monday. Pay-per-view's up on Thursday night, Friday morning. Speak soon.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag-and-drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today, no credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code GUARDIAN.